You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, we're all back together. Hi, fellas. I'm back from my trip west, where my viewing of crew games was spotty at best, especially when I put them on the TV and my dad started yelling at the TV because he doesn't like soccer. Why is it only 0-0? You know, those kinds of things. So it reminded me of old times. And back to new times with my pals here at the Mass Report Podcast. We got Alex, we got Ori, we got Bart, we got Murph. I'm Brian. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll check Twitter at the end for your questions. And if you could like and subscribe, please, 5 stars all around. That is much appreciated. And it really helps. What does it help us do, Murph? What does that help besides our self-esteem?
Well, mainly our self-esteem, but it also helps with some sort of algorithm to make our podcast show up to more people. So we want to get the word out there because you love our podcast so much. That's a way to help us do it, is to say how great we are.
So the algorithms end up running everything, basically. So we're just at their beck and call. Oh, we got a lot to get to tonight. Let's get to it very quickly. And as I was sitting here preparing, I got games all out of order in my head where I was traveling during the Philadelphia game. So I missed that whole thing. And then I'm thinking, well, we played Philadelphia after we played Orlando, but that's not true. That was on the 4th. And despite the fact that Nani got sent off on the weirdest red card I've ever seen, and we've seen some weird ones this year, the Crew lose 2-1 in Orlando. The first Orlando goal was just a ridiculously bad Harrison awful giveaway that led right to that goal. And then the red card, let's start with the red card. I mean, am I alone in this? I mean, that was pretty ridiculous, wasn't it?
It was a weird one because the tackle on, you know, normal viewing without slowing it down and looking at it bit by bit looked like a pretty, you know, it's certainly a foul, and I wasn't surprised by the yellow card, but no one complained. You know, usually if you get a studs up tackle or something on a player, you know, you get guys on that team, in this case the Crew's guys, you know, up in arms to the referee about what had just happened, and that was not the case there. And they were setting up to take the free kick for the VAR buzz down, and literally watching it on television, I'm thinking, okay, somebody must have done something in the wall or off, you know, marking somebody. There must have been an elbow throw. You know, I was very confused. And the broadcast feed from Orlando was showing one of their defenders or somebody, you know, defending in the box. And so they were clearly confused. And then when you watch it slow motion, you know, everything like that, I mean, I guess he does go in with some studs showing, you know, you could argue it's two-footed. I never saw a good enough replay that I thought, yeah, that's a red card. That needs to be clear and obvious overturned. I was very surprised when it was given. I was not surprised when it was then rescinded and Nani was allowed to play on decision day this Sunday.
Not that it helped them, as Orlando loses on decision day and falls below the Columbus Crew. So they put in all that work to win a 10-11 game and then lose to Nashville on Sunday. This is such a weird league. So they drop below the Crew, and we'll go over what that means for the Crew a little bit later on as we draw the Red Bulls in well over a week. Got some time to rest up. Any other thoughts on this game from any of you? I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on it.
I would just say I was concerned by the, and I think it's something that Caleb Porter's talked about wanting to have in this team, that ruthlessness. And that was not there against a team, against a rival team in a high-stakes game when you find yourself up a man, not to see that level of ruthlessness to, you know, really – step on their neck. And when that ball got cleared out leading up to that final goal, I mean, you knew that that was going to end up as a goal for Orlando, the way he fought through everything, and just you had just a sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach the second that ball got up and it became a 50-50 race. You know, even from that difficult angle and a lower room, you know, maybe one that he'd probably like to have back, but he's probably the last person I'm faulting on that play, because it shouldn't have been in the balance there. I think Crew should have put this game away once they went up a man. That's what you're supposed to do when you're a team ostensibly as good and as well positioned to make noise in the playoffs as this team should be when you just look at the standings. But clearly that's not the case when you look at their form over this last month and a half.
Yeah, Ori, I mean, he was on that second and decisive goal for Orlando, down a man. He's surrounded by three guys. He's about to come out of the match. Granted, it was a great effort, but that ball has to be won and cleared away. What the hell was going on?
Yeah, they let the ball bounce, and that's one of the first things that is, you know, bolded underneath, especially as a defender in those situations when a long ball is sent. You can't let the ball bounce. You have to try and win it in the air, trap it in the air, do something to avoid the attacking player oncoming. But Michel did a great job to keep his balance and keep an eye on the ball. You saw Keita and a couple of the other defenders sort of turning their heads around, Francis as well. So they didn't know where the ball was, whereas Benji Michel was just kind of keeping an eye on it, you know, looking back at his feet, looking back at the ball, and he did a great job to put that in. But the thing that I was most interested about after the game ended, and I asked Caleb Porter about this, was even though it was 11-10, you still have to break down two lines because a forward was sent off. And that's something that I was thinking about too as the game was going on. Because after Aful scored a phenomenal finish, I must say, left-footed shot, upper 90, fantastic goal, Columbus didn't really keep their foot on the gas for much of the time. And even though they had a man advantage, a defender wasn't sent off, a midfielder wasn't sent off, it was Nani, who's a forward. So the only thing that really changes is Orlando have one less person to go to going forward when they're attacking. And then when you're playing with a man behind, you're long balling it, going for that counter. And it wasn't like everything just magically, space just magically opened up for Columbus, because the defense was still on the pitch and the midfield was still on the pitch. So even though it was 11-10, it didn't really feel like it. And this was a team that had been playing so many games for so often. And Columbus got lucky that the loss didn't really bite them in the butt when it was all said and done on decision day.
Alex, I've watched a lot of soccer in my life, and I've seen 11-10 cut both ways, and you still have to put in the effort. And I think at the end of the day, it was just flat. And I know they're tired, and this was a rescheduled game, but it was just, the whole thing just felt wrong from the opening whistle, didn't it? You're muted, sir.
Oh, my goodness. I'm muted. Oh, terrible, terrible. One thing I will say, I'm optimistic that when all of the goals are finally tallied and they count all of the legal goals and rule out all the illegal goals, that the Crew will come away from the Orlando game with a win. No, in all seriousness, though, it was a terrible performance. I thought the Crew really didn't deserve anything from the game. You know, like we talked about, the Nani red card was a joke. The whole game to me, I thought, was really bizarre. I mean, so you have this like phantom red card. Nani walks off the field sobbing, and the Crew immediately start playing like crap. I don't know. It was a very, very forgettable game. And I think one of the things that's concerning to me is this team's been hot and cold. We've had a number of these games that are just completely, you want to forget you ever wasted 2 hours of your life watching them. So, you know, we'll talk about, you know, the more recent games coming up here. But that one was concerning for sure.
Murph, what is Caleb Porter has to be at this point in the season, just like tearing his hair out, trying to figure out which buttons to push for games like this. I feel like you're playing a big, big match against Orlando. You shouldn't have to push any buttons, but it's a road game, and that's been our bugaboo the whole season, which we didn't really think about because it's been a weird season. And I read that on the site the other day. I'm like, yeah, you're right. We're garbage on the road. Mm-hmm. How'd that happen?
Yeah, I mean, he took, you know, this one as, you know, his responsibility for not having the guys ready, you know. But I do think, you know, this comes down to a collective effort. You know, you come out with you know, a game plan, whether that works or not in the first half, I think can be argued. you know, especially with the way they were giving possession up out of the back. You mentioned Harrison Offal, Jonathan Mensah had a couple. It was just not a good game for that back four. But I think they started to find something right before halftime. Obviously got the goal after the red card, but you need that killer mentality, as was mentioned earlier, and they just didn't have it. And this is something that we've seen from this team on and off throughout the season. Alex mentioned it's been inconsistent this second half, so to speak, of the season. And, you know, I think that's what Caleb Porter was most disappointed about. And, you know, he expected to see that. Like you said, Brian, it was a big game. You know, it was a chance not only to clinch a home game in the playoffs, stay above Orlando, but get that road win, kind of get that monkey off your back before the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, I think everyone was disappointed that they didn't go out, especially once you go up a man and at least get a point. You know, to give up that goal was very disappointing for this team.
No question about it. So let's leave that one behind unless anybody has anything else on the Orlando game. It seems like it was like a month ago at this point. So we'll just leave that one be. And then Sunday it was decision day. Everybody in the East playing at the same time, 3:30 Eastern. And we had some surprising results. But this one, not particularly surprising, is the Crew beat Atlanta 2-1. And Atlanta not going to the playoffs. And the Crew helped out by VAR. No penalty originally whistled on Eloy Room. Do we agree with that call?
That was a funny
one. Talking a lot about VAR, haven't we?
Yeah, welcome to soccer in 2020. That was a funny one because Ori and I are at the stadium, and the artificial press box that they've made to accommodate social distancing and keep us outside is above the stage. And so that goal was on the opposite end of the – or that call was on the opposite end of the field in that box down the south end. And from my perspective, and I think Ori would agree, you know, it looks like Eloy Room comes out and catches Gallagher, and it's a penalty kick. And I quickly am either seeing on Twitter or getting texts from people. It's like, well, he went down, you know, he started to slip, or he went down before the contact was made. And, you know, they took a second before they decided to look at it. And so, you know, it's just funny because to me, it was like, oh, that's a penalty. Unfortunate situation. You know, Jonathan Mensah caught a little flat-footed, doesn't get to the ball in time, over the top and whatnot. But yeah, I think that's a case of VAR having looked at it again, where, you know, you get it right. Gallagher did start to go down, whether he slipped or not, before Room made contact. You know, if he stays on his feet, he probably does get the penalty kick, because there, you know, Room has to come rushing out, and he probably does make contact in the box. But I think that's one situation where they got it right. The Crew, you know, justly was given the no call from VAR, and I think, you know, Crew fans are going to be happy with that one, you know, especially with how, you know, giving up an early goal and such would have changed that game.
Ori, we got caught flat-footed on that play, though, didn't we?
Yeah, there were a couple instances in the first half where the team was caught flat-footed a little bit, but overall, they started off fast, which – you see Columbus do all the time at home. They're quick out of the gates. They're running out players. They're attacking. Atlanta started to develop a spell of possession there for some time. But after that, Columbus just put together a fantastic team goal, 23 passes from the back to the front, which it's ironic. Well, it's not really ironic. It's interesting that the two best team goals of the season for the Crew came against Atlanta United, which the 19-pass goal that Mokhtar scored, and we didn't see Yunus Mokhtar on the bench in this game, which is interesting. He scored that goal after 19 passes in Florida. So that just kind of shows Atlanta's potential poor teamwork, you know, lack of awareness of where the ball could go kind of thing. But overall, I thought the second half for moments was a little bit better. After Zardes got that second goal, then, I mean, that changes the whole dynamic of the game. Atlanta's playing for their season. They're putting 10 men up. You know, they're leaving two defenders, maybe one defender behind. Columbus wasn't really able to get much on the counterattack. But defensively, I think it was a better performance than what we've seen in the past couple of games, especially those road games where the defense was caught passing out the back and turning the ball over quite a bit, poor positioning and whatnot. So it was a little bit of a better performance. But they got incredibly lucky that Nashville scored that goal at the very end to secure that higher seed, because I think it puts them in a better position in the bracket. And we'll get into that later. I know Bart's got something.
I was just going to say, I think one of the differences for this team defensively was the return for Josh Williams. I think we all agree Bubba Keita is a terrific prospect, and he's really shown some really bright spots. But, you know, he's part of the reason that you give up that second goal against Orlando. And I think Josh Williams, again, just as that veteran player, as that calming presence, a guy who knows where to turn his hips and kind of, you know, just how this game works and the opponents in the MLS, was really a difference in getting him back in the lineup. I also thought this was such a game that was a really frustrating performance from Milton Valenzuela, as I have a cat attacking me right now. Excuse me. we've got, you know, where you saw glimpses of just his absolute how electric he can be offensively. He was really a catalyst, had an assist, and was a catalyst on both of Cruz's goals. But then again, beaten on the lone Atlanta goal. Poor job marking and taking the angles against the Atlanta attacker, and just for a player that we were absolutely just gushing about his defensive play when he first came to Columbus and at portions of the season, that's been, I think, one of the biggest concerns for me, is Milton as a player, overall, the consistency and the performance defensively in this game particularly. I think he's still head over heels above Waylon Francis right now, and we're talking about the pecking order, and he's still one of the better left backs that you have in MLS. But I'm a little bit concerned with some of the trends and some of what we've seen from Milton this season.
Well, and speaking of Josh Williams, and I always feel good when he's in the lineup, and we've been predicting goals from him all season. And Alex, he took a shot at least a half a bicycle in this particular match, which obviously would have led the entire podcast had he even made contact with the ball, I think.
Well, we know there's at least one tattoo on the line if Josh Williams scores. I think if he scored a bicycle kick, there would have to be some additional layer of, body marking.
Now remind our listeners what the tattoo is for Josh Williams.
Bart, do you want to take that one on behalf of GCG Back? Bart, you're on mute.
I got to unmute myself here. Sorry, I had to throw the cat out of the room. He was being too disruptive. As far as the official terms of the Josh Williams tattoo, it was originally, I believe, supposed to be a Josh Williams signature, but I do I can speak from authority that if Josh Williams had in fact scored a bicycle goal, and if he does in the future score one, TK will get a just entire covering all of his back. Like it's the MJ Jumpman logo, but instead Josh Williams doing a bicycle just across his entire back.
Yeah, I was
sort of being like the Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
uniforms, but it'll be him bearing a bicycle kick. I like it. Does this hold true for the playoffs then?
Oh yes, it holds true in perpetuity. Okay. I'll just have to talk Fair to enough. TK about it and confirm. But you know, he's a team player.
Sooner or later, it's going to happen. Well, it was good to have a ZZ Top game, Zella Rayon with a lovely goal, and then Zardes taking it upon himself there in the 55th, and a ball from Milton that was important in the play. But again, as you say, that giving up the penalty kick with the poor defending. Also, I marked on my notes the 53rd minute, a nice ripper from Pedro Santos as well, as a fellow left footer. I like to see that. So, you know, and Mensa team of the week, do we agree with that? You know, there's been a lot of kind of, and we'll get to that with our Twitter questions, but people concerned about his play of late, but MLS put him on the team of the week after this one. We got a problem with that?
problem probably isn't the right word. I was a little surprised. I didn't think for the number of games early in the season that we talked about how Jonathan Mensah should have been in the team of the week before they finally put a crew defender in there. This one did not jump out to me as like, he clearly deserves to be in the team of the week this week. Aside from, I think the one play with the Gallagher potential penalty kick where he just wasn't ready for the ball at the top, I thought he played well, but you know, I think that's more of an indictment of what the rest of the defenders in the league did than Jonathan really standing.
There were a lot of goals on Sunday.
Yeah, it's the makeup. I feel like it's a makeup call, like for all the times that they missed them. It's just like, we got to put someone. We're really getting flack for the way we dropped the ball on Mensah all for the first half of the season. Let's just give him one.
I kind of want to touch briefly on decision day, certainly in the East, because of the expanded playoffs. We're seeing some people in the tournament that we didn't expect to see. We'll get to that in a moment. But real quick, either Ori or Murph, did you get any indication? And probably not. They're so tight-lipped about this stuff. But Artur took a couple of knocks and eventually had to leave the game late. Any concerns over his status for the 21st?
I asked about that, and there wasn't enough information that Caleb knew at the time. My assumption would be is that we'll find out more in the coming days whenever another press conference happens, which, again, these guys get much, much needed rest that they need before the playoffs start. Now with the international break going on around world football. So our tour right now, they didn't say that it was anything like super serious, but he did have his ankle wrapped up when they were singing Wise Men after the victory and they were walking back to the tunnel. So we'll see. We'll see what they say, but it looks like he's going to be okay, especially with the extra rest that these guys are going
to
get.
He was healthy. He was healthy enough to throw his jersey to someone in the Nordex. So, you know,
okay. That's good to know, Murph. I don't know, Alex, am I crazy? I think Artur down the stretch has been the most consistent performer on this team.
Yeah, he's been solid. He's been really solid. We've needed somebody to step up in that midfield, and he's really done that so far. So that's really encouraging. I am worried about some of the legs on some of these guys, but they'll have a little bit of a break, and hopefully, as you know, the season kind of uncongests a little bit, they'll be able to find their form, and we can kind of hit our strides. But some of the most recent games that we've talked about were a little bit concerning. So we'll have to wait and see which crew team shows up as we kind of head into the playoffs. But, Artur's been pretty strong.
We'll talk about Red Bulls in Toronto in a moment because that'll be a part of our preview of the playoff game as we look ahead. Their game with Toronto on decision day. But when I was keeping track of everything, Miami's victory over Cincinnati leading to a playoff berth. I was like, what? Was this a possibility? Apparently I hadn't been paying attention. I mean, good for Will Trapp, good for Pipa. They're in the playoffs, albeit, you know, doing it the hard way here, but congratulations to them. Anything else you see on Sunday that surprised you at all?
There was some interesting last minute drama. First off, there was first half drama in Chicago. We were obviously watching the Columbus game at the stadium and on Twitter trying to keep track of everything going on in the other games in the East. Chicago and New York City were tied 3-3 at halftime. New York City was up 3-1, and then Chicago's Frankowski scored two goals within 3 minutes to make it 3-3. And that game was incredibly crucial for Columbus in the standings, because if New York City came with a victory and Columbus had other results go against them and how they played, they could have dropped down to the fifth seed. And there were moments in the live table where Columbus was 4, then 3, then 5, then 4, and they were just going all over the place. And then the thing that's also fascinating is there were 7 games in the East. 6 of them, we're talking gorgeous summer-like weather. It was 70 and sunny in Columbus and a lot of other places around the country. It was beautiful. Then you go down to Miami where Inter is playing FC Cincy, and it is a downpour tsunami of rain, and Cincinnati was unable to get a victory there, and Jossie Zardes ended up scoring just as many goals as Cincinnati did this season, which is pretty spectacular to say the least. But
And Alex, Cincinnati did get a goal in that game, though. So
They did, and only one. You know, I was really, you know, when you look at their track record throughout the season, I was shocked that they didn't come away with the 3 points there. You know, a real shocker. They almost never lose, so it was just, you know, really surprising and disappointing.
And it was from Joe Zhao. Joe Zhao, I think, was one of their bright spots in the season, but they're blowing up their roster, restarting everything. And then in the last minute of these games, Montreal came away with a huge victory over DC with some late second half goals to get Thierry Henry side into the playoffs. And then Nashville just pulling a madness against Orlando, scoring in the 88th minute and the 90th minute to beat Orlando City, setting up a full 2020 expansion play-in game on Friday the 20th. Nashville's going to play Miami in their first year in existence in the MLS Cup playoffs, which is fascinating.
That's crazy. And then out west, I'll just mention that they had a blizzard in Salt Lake City. So.
Oh, yeah, there was a snow game in Utah, and that ended up being – what was the score of that game?
Sporting won it 2-0 to 2-0. Walk up. The West in Philadelphia wins the restored supporter shield.
Yep.
In the East with their victory over New England, a supporter shield that Toronto still had a shot at on Sunday. And the highlights that I watched as we segue into our first round opponent, Red Bulls, the goals that I saw from Red Bulls.
Hey, Brian, before we jump into that, I think we should touch on one Franco Escobar who lost his mind.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. And you guys have been writing about it in the chat, and I haven't.
Yeah, it's all good.
Thank you. We'll circle back to this because you're right. What I was told is that it was hard unless you were there to know what was going on, and you and Ori were there. So take us through what happened.
So Escobar's given a second yellow. I believe watching the replay more for what he said to the referee after fouling Nagby than the actual foul, because the foul was pretty innocuous. I mean, he'd kind of been asking for it for a bit there. And just to be clear, for people who haven't watched Atlanta much this year, Escobar, while a talented defender, is a bit of a hothead, and that's putting it lightly. He was given a red card, starts to walk off, and then all of a sudden turns around towards the crew bench and, you know, proceeds to walk over there aggressively, shove one of the, from what I understand, is somebody working to carry the stretcher. Not a coach, not a player. I guess he heard his explanation, which is posted on MLSsoccer.com. It's a tweet from him that said, "My attitude was not good after seeing the red card, but it is difficult not to react when someone from the opposing team makes fun of you for being eliminated." So, you know, who knows what he said. I can't imagine that it was anything that, you know, if you haven't seen the play, you can watch the highlight. MLS Soccer has that specific highlight under on the game page. I'm sure you've at least seen what was on TV, but yeah, very strange. You know, and I was told there was even a headbutt. I didn't see that.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, and then Escobar takes off his shirt as he's walking to the tunnel, goes into the tunnel, and I didn't know this until afterwards, and I guess people on TV saw this, but he walked to the locker room, then came back out and stood in the tunnel as the game ended, and this was only with a few minutes left, with his shirt back on, and then tried to move, come back out to the field or something. There was a clip of guys, you know, going over and pushing him back. I think Jeff Lorenowitz pushing him back to the locker room. So a crazy, you know, and again, this is a guy who has got a history of being a hothead, has had some issues this year. I believe he's one of the most carded players in the league this season and has served, I think, two suspensions for yellow card accumulation. So that tells you a little bit, but I think a lot of this too is just frustration on the part of Atlanta's players, and not to put Escobar on all of them, but this is a team that came in the league very successfully. You know, not most expansion teams don't make the playoffs their first year. Atlanta did, obviously lost to Columbus, but you know, wins an MLS Cup within the first few years of being in the league. You know, the standard was set very high for Atlanta, and to miss out on the playoffs like this, I believe this is Escobar's first year with the club. So clearly expected more out of it. You know, Joseph Martinez is a huge loss, but that doesn't explain how poorly this team has played. You know, Martinez doesn't defend, so you know, they gave up a lot of goals. But I think it was, you know, a combination of a player who was hot already and just knowing how poor that they've played. And I think there's a lot of pressure on those guys in Atlanta. You know, I think this, obviously with their attendance and whatnot, it's a big deal down there. So, yeah, a crazy end to that game. And there were a couple other tackles. Luis Diaz took a couple hard fouls, one from Brad Guzan.
Guzan, yeah.
Yeah, who came up on a corner. And, you know, frankly, I think he just wanted to make sure he didn't get, you know, a goal scored on him from 80, 90 yards away, but a pretty hard tackle. Goalkeepers should not be slide tackling for the most part. But, you know, yeah, Atlanta was clearly upset, you know, with the situation. And, you know, the crew fortunately kept their heads clean and didn't get anything that would then carry over to the playoffs. But just a crazy situation, really.
That's a good point, Murph. And Ori, it's like this is Atlanta's first brush with disappointment.
Yep.
Seriously.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's, you play professional sports, you're going to be disappointed, and you're going to, certainly in our game, you're going to get it from supporters, whether there's only 1500, and maybe you hear it better when there's only 1500 there. I don't know, but that's not a good excuse. You know?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a moment of passion and emotion. And you could see from those players, you know, these are guys that are MLS champions, a lot of them. You know, Escobar actually, in fact, has been with Atlanta United since 2017, but he played for the Atlanta United 2 team for a little bit there in 2019. But it's interesting. Escobar in 16 games this season, 7 yellows, 1 red. He got a yellow card in each MLS's back game in Florida in the 3 group matches that they played. And
it's a fine line, and we've complained at times that our team doesn't have that kind of grit, but it's a fine line between a guy that is an intimidator, an enforcer, to use hockey parlance. But if they cross that line too often, they're hurting the team.
Yes, and historically you've seen players in this sport that, you know, can cross that line, whether it's overacting with diving or getting really animated with the officials. And a lot of that breathes from the passion of the sport and the game and of these athletes. You know, this is their livelihood. This is the sport that they've loved and played for their whole lives. And you have to also just, yeah, and I agree with Pat. Think of the pressure these guys were potentially feeling. Atlanta United has been a small bright spot in what has been a very, very tough couple of years for Atlanta and Georgia sports in that state. You know, the Falcons have not been able to catch up since losing that Super Bowl and constantly blowing leads. We saw what happened with Georgia football. The Atlanta Hawks are not very good. The Braves have had some disappointing exits in MLB. They don't have a hockey team. And Atlanta United is going out, you know, getting into the playoffs while they've been existing, you know, since they've existed essentially, and winning MLS Cup in their second year of existence and selling out games at an NFL stadium. And the fact that this season they were unable to make a playoffs and fall behind two teams in their first year of existence, one of which didn't even play in MLS's back in Nashville and come away with one of the best defensive seasons we've seen in MLS and make the postseason in a comfortable seventh place in the East, which they weren't even supposed to be in the East, but that changed. You know, that's tough for them. So
yeah,
it was a weird, weird situation. I started hearing the commotion as it happened. We didn't have the best view of it because it's tough, but 1500 people there, you could hear the boos. It felt like there was 20,000 people there.
It's a tough situation, but like, again, these are professionals, and sorry,
I agree. I think
there's a double standard when it comes to who can throw hissy fits. And it's one thing to be Zinedine Zidane headbutting Materazzi as one of, you know, you're one of the greatest players in history. And it's another thing to be a guy who was playing on Atlanta two years ago and has been, you know, a so-so defender for a bad team. And who, look, I'm sorry, you might be mad that you're eliminated, but you're eliminated because you made a reckless challenge and ran your mouth and got yourself another yellow and red card in a high pressure situation when your team still had it. Like, the blame is on you, and that doesn't, you know, change the fact that you're going to overreact in something, but that is absurd, going to another team's touch sideline and pushing someone who's not even involved in the game. I don't know if this is going to be, I would assume that I don't know. I wouldn't assume because it's MLS, but that there's going to be a suspension involved with this that would begin, you know, starting in the next season, but I don't know. It's MLS. So they'll probably be like, you get to serve the suspension during the playoffs and count every game, you know, that's played in the playoffs is a game that you've served, because otherwise Atlanta would be in. And you already served it. There you go.
My understanding is Escobar will probably not be back with this team next year after the some of the issues this year. So whether MLS gives him a suspension or not, I don't know if he will ever have to serve it. They do play in the CONCACAF Champions League in December. That picks back up after the COVID pause. I don't think there's any way that can be enforced in those games, just given the different league, you know, the stuff. But that may be his last time playing for Atlanta is if they choose to use him in those games.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He went to the other side of that line, no question. Thank you for bringing that up, guys. I completely spaced because we have so much to get to, and I just bleh. Because I wanted to talk about what I saw of Red Bulls in Toronto the other day, where Toronto still had a chance to get the support shield, and their defending couldn't have been more bored in that, you know, that 5-minute window where Red Bulls, Barlow and White, got both their goals. And I don't know if you guys saw any of the highlights, but Toronto looked like they couldn't be bothered to do anything. They just turned around and watched. It was a weird thing. And if that's all you knew of Red Bulls, you would think, well, what a dangerous team. But they've actually really been struggling. It's been a bumpy ride for them and a weird performance for Toronto the other day. I don't know what we can draw out of that going into the playoffs. Red Bulls have had trouble scoring goals. They've lost some games they shouldn't. Any general thoughts on them? It's been a while since we've seen them.
I think the general consensus about the Red Bulls is the fact that, you know, they just lost one of their most prolific goal scorers in Bradley Wright Phillips to LAFC. And, you know, they were still able to put together a pretty decent season. I mean, you look at what the stats of the Toronto game. Toronto had 64% possession, 14 shots to Red Bulls 8, but Red Bulls were efficient in their shooting with Barlow and White scoring those goals. They've also got some promising young defenders, you know, the likes of Kyle Duncan, and you also have Aaron Long. So they've got a couple of guys that have put together decent seasons for them. You know, Barlow and White definitely in there as well. So is Florian Vallot. And, you know, Columbus played this team way back when, and MLS is back. It feels like 10 years ago. And it was a pretty comfortable victory for them, because some teams really flourished in the bubble format. Other teams just didn't perform. Columbus was lucky enough that they played against three teams that were not very good in the bubble. But this Red Bulls team has been able to put together a nice run since the home market return. They've had a couple of disappointing results, you know, 5-2 loss to New York City, losing to Inter Miami, losing to Orlando. They did lose to Cincinnati at home, which is definitely not something. Because that was the game that Madunyanin scored from a corner kick directly in Olympico. Right. So, you know, they've had some bad stretches, but they had a late run of form there in October that basically got them into the playoffs, beating Atlanta, earning draws at Toronto, at Chicago, beating New England, and then beating Toronto kind of helped them shore up a sixth spot to avoid a play-in game. So this will definitely be a battle. And, you know, the history between these two teams in the playoffs, they've played so many big matches against each other since the Red Bulls have turned into the Red Bulls from the Metro Stars. So it's been an interesting season for the Red Bulls. They have struggled to score. 29 goals is not that many in 23 games, but it's going to be a battle for sure. This should be a very, very interesting contest, and I think the Red Bulls defense could give the Columbus attackers some potential issues. So, and if we'll see how they do, because the road trip for a playoff game is going to be the same as they've done for the regular season, and we'll see how that affects them too.
Bart, you know, I jotted down notes from the history of postseason matchups of these two teams, and of course the one that really sticks in everyone's craw is 2018 that 3-0 loss, leg two. That's still a bitter pill.
I was there for that. Just absolutely deflating game. We drove out on the bus, I think you were there with us, Murph, for that one. And just remember how excited we were for that game.
I was
too. Just what an absolute letdown. And that's the first time I'd ever seen a game in New Jersey. Credit to him, that the first time I've been to Red Bull Arena, absolutely, I mean, great place to watch a soccer game. Credit to their staff that led us and accommodated everything. I think it's going to be a little, obviously it's not an away game this time around, so the crew have that going for them. But that's a difficult place to play when you've got a lot of fans there, but not the case this time around.
Well, the interesting thing when I think back to these two teams and recent playoffs are I think it was the 2015 playoffs, right? When the crew scored the 9 seconds in goal, the fastest in, I think, playoff history. That was a game that the Red Bulls came here to Columbus as the Supporters Shield winners. And that was the team that, out of their run of form over those 5-6 years under Jesse Marsh, probably was best equipped to win an MLS Cup. They come into Columbus. You give up a goal that early. We've talked about giving up goals on the road all season, but you give up a goal that early, I mean, you're just kind of stunned at that point.
And it was so cold.
Yeah, it was very cold.
That's what I remember, the goal.
It was.
And how cold it was.
Yeah.
Does anyone remember who scored the other crew goal that night?
Kamara.
Yes.
Yeah.
Guy Kamara.
On like a 2-inch tap-in.
Yeah.
Right. But I went back and looked at my notes, or I found a website that had all this archived. I'm like, wow, I guess I blocked that out because the Justin Miram goal looms so large. And obviously, the biggest one, 08, the East Final, a 3-1 win with Marino and Marshall and Hayek.
The MLS
Not
Cup
the East
Final.
Final, yeah.
Because MLS. New York was somehow the Western Conference champion.
Yes, New MLS. York Red Bulls in the Western Conference.
Yes, yes, the MLS Cup. That's, yes.
Yeah. That was a game that, before I started covering the team, that was back when I still attended games as a fan, and I flew out to California the day after the Ohio State-Michigan game with my buddy Nick, and that was quite the weekend.
Well, apparently it was for me too, because I'd forgotten that.
Let's go. Yeah, we got to go and celebrate with the team at the team hotel after they had their dinner with their families. It was quite the experience. But yeah, I think I was going to bring that up as well. That is probably the defining crew Red Bulls, probably any game, but certainly playoff game. Since then, the Red Bulls have still not won an MLS Cup. And the crew are going to look to try and deny them once again.
And my favorite piece of MLS merchandise, which is in the hands of crew fans, are two hats that say New York Red Bulls MLS Cup champions that were prepared in case they had won and then were not properly destroyed and were obtained by crew fans and are still owned by crew fans. So
trophies.
Always great. That's right. More trophies.
Who got the 3 assists in a game? In that game, the man that needs a little love right now.
Guillermo.
Yeah.
Your LA Galaxy head coach, Guillermo Barros Schelotto.
Talk about a terrible season. They bring Chicharito in, and the Galaxy don't even make the playoffs because Zlatan greater than anything on earth.
Well, and Chicharito just didn't play most of the year, so that doesn't
help either. Yeah,
well, we love him, and it feels bad for it to end that way. Hopefully, he'll get another shot. Okay, so are we gonna gather together again before we play Red Bulls, or is this our preview?
Yeah, I think we should. I think we'll get together and really dig into that matchup next week. And
that sounds good. We'll make our picks then. So yeah. why don't we wrap up by going to Twitter and answering some questions? And I'll just I'll read them and whoever feels like answering them. How do you think the season would have been different if Vito didn't get hurt? Any updates on his recovery? That from Kale Hover.
I think that, well, to answer the second question first, I'm working to get a story on Vito here before the playoffs stuff gets going. So hopefully we'll have more on him at Massive Report here in the next week or so. But I think that the season probably would have gone similarly. I think what could have changed with him available throughout the year, because let's remember, this team had 5 goals conceded through 13 games. I'm not sure you can do much better than that. But I think you don't see the fatigue we've seen over the last few weeks to Jonathan Mensah. I think, it's hard to judge, if you put this back in time, but if Josh Williams still gets suspended 4 games, you now have a veteran that can step in aside from Jonathan with, in addition to Kata. You probably don't play Jonathan every minute of every game because you can rotate Josh Williams and Abubakar Kata in there. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then maybe that changes some results because you're able to, stop a goal here or there, or, whatever the situation may be. So I think that's what it is. I'm really excited for Vito next year. I think this is, you talk about Bart, you mentioned kind of, or somebody mentioned earlier, a little bit of an enforcer type, that can, whether it's get in the other team's face or just kind of fire people up, he has that in him. And
well, look at that hair. I mean, that hair is intimidating enough.
Right. And not only do I think he's going to be a good defender for the team, and you saw it in the opening game of the season against New York City, kind of the physically imposing stature that he brings. But you get kind of a Twin Towers situation with two bigger guys at center back. And I think he's a very good defender from the little I've seen and the stuff I saw at practice and whatnot. So best of luck to him. Hopefully he does get healthy. Everything we've seen or heard has been good thus far. It's been a while since we got an update. He was at when they put the final piece in the construction site that is going to be the training center. They had the media out for that, and he was the player that they brought out. For some reason, they had him scooter out there, but he was walking a little bit on the ankle, still limping quite a bit, but looked like he was about where you would expect from somebody who broke their ankle, a month and a half or so out. So it sounds like things are going well.
Travis writes, do you think the time off will allow Mensah to recover and the defense to perform like it did at MLS is back?
I think performance is up in the air because when you see time off, it can go one of two ways. Either a team is fully energized and raring to go and ready to play and play great, or they kind of fall out of a rhythm and they don't play as well. So performance yet to be seen, but this is definitely going to help Mensah. This time off will help all the guys on the team be able to rest and recover because they've just been, this is the hardest season they've ever had to play. Just think about the amount of games they've played and this amount of time with the way they've traveled and dealing with COVID and false positive tests and, not being able to train at certain points because of that. So it's nice that they're able to get themselves a break. And I think they're going to be very, very motivated going into that Red Bulls game. And obviously they'll probably be the favorites in that match because they're at home. You're looking at a team that won nine of their first 10 matches at home in the regular season. But at the same time, people are probably looking at the Crew going into the bracket thinking they haven't won on the road. So as a 3 seed, maybe they need to hope for some upsets in order to stay at home to keep that run going. So that might be the monkey they have to take off their back in order to win MLS Cup, win a game on the road. But yeah, this rest is going to help them a lot, I believe. And performance-wise, we'll see.
Dublin Crew Cats, right? This is a multi-parter. We'll start with this. Will there be a 2021 home match at Mapfre, given rumors the season might start in May?
I think, yeah. I think they'll still get a game in there in Mapfre. Even now, whether it's a one that we could sell out or that they can even have, more than – 1,600, 2,400 fans, that might be something different. But I don't think – I think it's going to be hard. I think if MLS will try to do and crew will try to schedule similarly to the way DC United did a couple years ago, to try to, you know, front or backload as many home games as possible in the schedule so they can play as many of them as you can in that new stadium. But I think we do see at least a game in Mafre, and I think that'll be a good thing too.
Yeah, Murph, is construction on track where they want it to be schedule-wise?
For the stadium?
Yeah.
Yes. They were able to work through the COVID shutdowns because it was outside and they were able to do things socially distant, especially because it was early. If you've been by the stadium, it's starting to have an actual structure to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, it's on track as far as I know for that July opening. And I agree with Bart. I think, you know, especially given the way this season went, I think they would at least like to try to have a, you know, one last hurrah where fans can come out to a game, maybe a few. I know talking to Pete Edwards when they broke ground on the stadium, you know, obviously this was way back and pre-COVID and everything, you know, that was the plan was, you know, they didn't want to do, while they would have more home games probably later in the year and wanted to have it at the new stadium, they didn't want to, you know, be like some teams in the past where you're so, you know, on the road for so long to start the season and then having to play catch up later in the year. So obviously things have changed and we'll see what the COVID situation is at the time, but I certainly could see if it's possible them trying to have at least one, if not a few games at Mafre to get fans one last chance to come out and see a game there if health restrictions and whatnot allow.
Yeah, I mean, usually when this happens, I know when it happened in Portland, it was like, well, the stadium is unplayable right now. It's under construction, but we have a place to play. So I would like the schedule just to be evenly weighted, because when you have these 7-8 game road trips, it just sets you so far behind the eight ball. So there'll be plenty of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, there's something to be said for starting off in a full stadium. And, you know, who knows what the vaccine situation will be looking like middle of next year. You know, will 75% of people be immune at that point? Will 90% be? Will 20% be? There's so little data right now that it's really hard to say. But, you know, I think maybe you want to kick it down the road a little bit if you think that you can get more people in there if you wait a couple months. So that's kind of something looming as well.
Well, I'll give this one to you, Alex, as Dublin Crew Cats also wanted to know which crew player probably drinks the most Red Bull.
Oh, see, that's a great question. That's a really great question.
None this week, though, right? I mean, you can't drink the enemy drink.
Who was I need to think about that.
Tastes like gasoline.
Was it you, Ori, that said Aiden Morris? Because off air, because I think that's the
someone. I don't think it was me, but someone said Aiden Morris, and I agree because he's young. So Red Bull's been out the longest during his lifespan, and he's also young. So and he's full of energy. I said young twice. Young and full of energy. He's running around
just
the field
playing. Yeah.
He's looking like Peter Griffin did when he was drinking Red Bull in that Family Guy episode. And then he poured it on a flower and then it went to punch somebody in the face.
Well, Alex thinks
Red
about
Bull
this.
Does give Aiden Morris wings.
Well, Alex thinks about his answer. I want to remind people back in the day, I think it was the first year that they were the New York Red Bulls. I think it was Aleko Eskandarian for DC United. Scored a goal and went over to the sidelines and just chugged a Red Bull that they had pre-prepared for them. And that was one of the best goal celebrations in MLS history.
And then his heart exploded and that was it.
Yeah, the other one, while Alex continues to think, was...
I'm ready.
Oh, sorry. Well, I'm just going to continue talking. Was also DC in New York. And it was when DC was playing at RFK and they were also... The Nationals were also there and there was the baseball diamond. And somebody scored against them and went to the home plate and pretended to hit a home run. That was another great MLS one. All right, Alex, take us home.
I mean, I think it's going to be Chris Cadden. I think Chris Cadden, after a long day of training, cracks open a couple Red Bulls, sits in front of a TV and you know, plays some Call of Duty or something like that for a couple hours. So I'm going with Cadden. You know, I've got nothing against Red Bull as a beverage. I remember one year somebody from the Red Bull organization came around to the Nordeca tailgate with like a case of Red Bulls that they were giving away for free. And it was like 92 degrees outside. And everybody was like, no, we're not drinking that stuff. I was like, I'll take one. Like, absolutely. By all means. It's refreshing. It's good. You know, we don't have an energy drink sponsor. So that's safe to say, right?
Yeah, and the energy drink has like 50% of the world football clubs. Red Bull's got a team in Leipzig, a team in Salzburg, a team in New York. I think they have a team in Brazil. They'll probably have 10, 20 more teams in the next couple of years.
They're not investing. You know, they're not investing. They haven't signed a player that anybody's heard of since Thierry Henry retired. I mean, it's fine. They were like, we're going to sign Wright Phillips. And then everybody's like, oh, cool. And then it was like, but it's the other Wright Phillips, not the guy who played – in the Premier League. So you know, they're cheap skating it. It's fine. I've got nothing against the Red Bulls.
I'm just gonna object to that on Chris Cadden, because I don't think he drinks anything but Aaron Brew, the official, you know, drink of Scotland. So I don't know. I'm still sticking with Aidan Morris.
But do you think that that's something that maybe is part of his American adventure, is like, you know, he's lived, you know, from the time he was 3 years old, that was the only liquid that he was allowed to drink. And now he comes over to America and, you know, he has all of these different options available to him, you know, and maybe he's just, you know, running down to the 24-hour supermarket and, you know, picking up a couple late night Red Bulls to, you know, get through that Call of Duty marathon, you know.
But of all the beverages to pick to, like, oh, American beverage, I don't think Red Bull is on the top of many people's list. The first thing that maybe comes to mind, maybe like Mountain Dew or something, because they have Coke and Pepsi all over the world.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, but soda's way better in Europe.
Kool-Aid too. In Scotland. Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Gatorade.
So, Murph, if we can get a 4,000-word long-form article on Chris Cadden's favorite energy drinks and beverages of choice on masterreport.com, that would be excellent. I don't know if that's possible.
After all that, I need a Red Bull and vodka.
All right, water.
Well, maybe we'll tackle that one next time. A more in-depth preview with our score picks for the Red Bulls game, which is Saturday the 21st at 3 p.m. at Mockray Stadium. And it's on Univision?
Unimas and TUDN with English language broadcast on Sports Time Ohio and MLSsoccer.com for streaming. Since the two games on Saturday will be the only first round and play in MLS playoff games that will not be broadcast on a national station.
I thought for sure that Red Bulls would draw national interest, being that they're a New York area team, but I guess I was wrong. Okay, so we'll meet again next
week. Alex has got something, Brian.
I've just got a question. I want to get early predictions for this. This is not a score prediction. Do we think that we are going to get snow games this season? Because of how it's weird inevitable. Everything is?
It's inevitable.
Well, it already snowed during the Philly game.
It snowed during the Philly game, yeah. That was like, an adventure.
Not crazy, just like right towards the end there was some snow.
Yeah.
I would like one crew game where they have to break out the orange ball, the high visibility ball. I would like
that. You don't want that. You don't want that. Come on.
Make it a Red Bull colored ball. It'd be neon green.
All right, they did have to do that this weekend.
Here. Despite that discussion at the end, the arcane qualities of Red Bull, like and subscribe, give us a 5-star review. Just forget that last part, okay? And everything, you know, have yourself a Red Bull. And like and subscribe to the Massive Report podcast. We thank you so much for listening. For Ari, for Murph, for Alex, for Bart, my name is Brian. And we'll talk to you next week as we slide into the playoffs.